from WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The Senate Intelligence Committee today released a damning report saying key justifications for the invasion of Iraq last year were wrong. The bipartisan report blames the Central Intelligence Agency and other agencies for bad intelligence or false or overstated analysis that supported the Bush administration's case for war. Senator Jay Rockefeller, West Virginia Democrat and vice chair of the committee, said today that the vote for war would have been different if the truth had been known.
There is simply no question that mistakes leading up to the war in Iraq rank among the most devastating losses and intelligence failures in the history of the nation. The fact is that the administration at all levels, and to some extent us, used bad information to bolster its case for war. And we in Congress would not have authorized that war. We would not have authorized that war with 75 votes if we knew what we know now.
Pre-war intelligence analysis was just plain wrong, said Senator Pat Roberts, Republican from Kansas, the committee chair, but it was potent.
Before the war, the U.S. intelligence community told the president, as well as the Congress and the public, that Saddam Hussein had stockpiles of chemical and biological weapons, and if left unchecked, would probably have a nuclear weapon during this decade. Well, today we know these assessments were wrong. And as our inquiry will show, they were also unreasonable and largely unsupported by the available intelligence.
But even at 511 pages, today's report may only be half as damning as it could be. What it doesn't say is how the intelligence was used or misused by the Bush administration as a whip to war. The committee is not likely to report on that issue until after the November presidential election. Tonight on Point, the Senate report on pre-Iraq war intelligence, what it says, what it doesn't say, and the politics of inquiry. We begin in Washington. John Diamond covers intelligence for USA Today and was at this morning's press conference on Capitol Hill. He joins us now. John Diamond, good to have you with us.
Hi, Tom.
John, a lot of this information in broad stroke and in some detail has been out there for a while. What do we know that's truly new after digesting what the Senate has put out today?
There is a tremendous amount of detail in the 500-page report. I'm not all the way through it yet, to tell you the truth. But, for example, there's a long and detailed chapter on the whole issue of whether Iraq sought to buy uranium ore from Niger and the whole controversy about the inclusion of that charge in President Bush's State of the Union address in January 2003.
Mm-hmm. The famous yellow cake.
Yellow cake uranium. It's an extremely detailed account with some censorship or redactions, as they say, of sensitive information regarding sourcing, particularly information that came from Britain.
And just to describe it, those are heavy black lines throughout this report that the CIA required or asked for.
It's about 20% or so of the report has redactions.
Mm-hmm.
But the main points come across. And in the case of the Niger situation, you have intelligence coming from a single source that the CIA seizes on to report and repeat the concern that Iraq is attempting to make these purchases. Subsequent intelligence collection efforts directly by the CIA or by designees don't confirm this. But the rumor just won't die. It continues to pop up in reports and then ultimately speeches. And I think we'll see a great amount of new detail here. But as you point out, the broad strokes have been known. The key word in this report is overstated. That word is repeated throughout the report in that the CIA took the intelligence it could get, and that was at times meager intelligence indeed, on what was going on inside of Iraq, and overstated the case as to the state of Iraq's weapons. And just one example of the weak sourcing, the CIA, after 1998, for the 4.5 years running up to the war, had no sources, no human sources on weapons of mass destruction inside Iraq.
Fairly astonishing. The chairman of the committee, Pat Roberts, blamed a lot of what was going on there on what he called groupthink. Let's listen to that. I want to hear your thoughts on this, John, but first, Pat Roberts.
The committee concluded that the intelligence community was suffering from what we call a collective groupthink, which led analysts and collectors and managers to presume that Iraq had active and growing WMD programs. This groupthink caused the community to interpret ambiguous evidence, such as the procurement of dual-use technology, as conclusive evidence of the existence of WMD programs.
Groupthink, John Diamond, collective groupthink, the committee chairman says and points a finger at as being responsible here. What does he mean by that? What was going on?
I think that there were several ingredients here. What he means by that is that there was a collective assumption across most of the intelligence community and virtually all of the CIA that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction and had ambitions to improve and expand its arsenal of weapons of mass destruction. The ingredients to this include the fact that after the Persian Gulf War of 1991, the Central Intelligence Agency was badly embarrassed by findings that Iraq had much more than had been anticipated in the way of chemical and biological weapons and a nuclear program. They didn't want to repeat that embarrassment, so there was therefore a tendency perhaps to overestimate what they had or to err on the side of assuming that there was more there than met the eye. Then you had the 9/11 ingredient, which was the idea that the Central Intelligence Agency failed to detect that plot and missed clues to the plot to hijack those planes. And there was a feeling at the agency that they'd been embarrassed, that they'd missed one, that they hadn't connected the dots. Well, in the case of Iraq, the feeling was there were all kinds of dots. There were dots all over the place. There were suspicions about what Iraq was importing and what Iraq was trying to do, intercepts and communications and so forth. And the feeling was that surely the CIA was not going to get caught missing a threat once again.
But in this case, it turns out, the committee's saying today that they were too aggressive or just plain wrong in the way they connected dots, some of the dots which appeared to exist and did not, in fact. One issue that has been floating around all of this is whether or not the intelligence agencies were pressured by the Defense Department, by the White House, to come up with this analysis. The report today says no, but you've got other kinds of statements from Jay Rockefeller, for example.
That's right. You have statements from Rockefeller. You have in the minority report that Rockefeller and several other Democratic senators put out, you have the fact that the CIA's ombudsman, whose name has not been released, that CIA Director George Tenet and that a gentleman named Richard Kerr, who's a former CIA official, asked to come in and examine the whole Iraq intelligence issue, all told the committee at various times and in various ways that they saw examples or instances where subordinates at the agency were talking about pressure. The question is, and what's unclear in the partisan back and forth, is whether it was pressure to change analysis or whether it was simply pressure to go get more. It appears to me that it was more the latter. In other words, the CIA didn't really need to be pressured to say that Iraq had WMD. They were already saying that. It was really more of a matter of the vice president and others who wanted to make the case for war, wanting the CIA to go out and get more and better intelligence. That's what I gather from my reading of the document so far.
And finally, John, you're there in Washington today. You've heard what people said, Roberts and Rockefeller, at this morning's press conference. The vote would have been different. What's your sense? Can you responsibly conjecture that the United States would not have gone to war?
Yeah.
Is it even possible to imagine, intelligence, this bad intelligence not having been sitting there?
I think that if you really parse his quote, he perhaps could be said to be saying that perhaps the majority
would have been
large.
No.
But several senators have come out today and said they would not have changed their vote, including some Democrats such as Hillary Rodham Clinton. There's certainly a political imperative if you're an elected official, not to come out and say, whoops, I made a mistake on that war vote, sorry. So there seems to be a tendency now for members, even Democrats, not to reverse themselves at this point, but to focus on things like the human rights, the appalling human rights situation under Saddam's regime. But certainly it would have been a much tougher case to make. I don't think there's any question about that. And Rockefeller was making that point today.
Well, more to come at some point in the second half of this report on the politics and pressure. But for today, John Diamond, thanks very much for joining us.
You're welcome.
John Diamond covers intelligence for USA Today. He spoke with us from Washington. We are talking tonight about the Senate's report on pre-war intelligence released today. Where do you place blame for the flawed assessment of pre-war Iraq? With the coalition death toll hitting 1,000 today, who's responsible for raising the false alarm that led to war? Did you think before the war that the CIA could be so inept that bad intelligence could be taken so far? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from Berkeley, California, is Mark Danner, a staff writer for The New Yorker magazine and professor of journalism at the University of California, Berkeley. His articles, Iraq, How Not to Win a War and Delusions in Baghdad, appeared in the New York Review of Books. Good evening and welcome, Mark Danner.
Good evening, Tom.
Mark, you've written a lot about this and followed it closely. Your thoughts as you saw this big 500-page report reeled out today and heard Rockefeller and Roberts at the podium. Where have we come to in our understanding of the intelligence that led this country to this war?
Well, you know, my first thought as I was looking, paging through this report, is that, as you pointed out at the top of the show, much of what we read here is familiar in one way or another. Mm. And that familiarity, in a way, undermines what should be a sense of astonishment on the part of Americans about what this report says, about the story it tells. I have it in front of me, the conclusions, which about 35 pages, in which,
right,
I'd urge your listeners to download off the web. It's a remarkable document. And it begins with the first conclusion. Most of the major judgments in the intelligence community's October 2002 National Intelligence Estimate, Iraq's continuing programs for weapons of mass destruction, either overstated or were not supported by the underlying intelligence reporting. Mm-hmm. A series of failures, particularly in analytic tradecraft, led to the mischaracterization of the intelligence. This is, as I think Senator Rockefeller said earlier today, is unprecedented, I think, in American history. That is, the United States went to war against the views of some of its longest and most faithful allies on the basis of intelligence information that is now shown to be wrong.
Mark Danner,
and that is an extraordinary fact. And now I think no one can dispute the fact that it is a fact. And I think we should all take a deep breath for a moment and forget about the fact that we've had leaks about this for months and so on, and just reflect on how remarkable it is that the United States is in a war in Iraq that was based on what seems to have been a false premise.
It is incredible to contemplate. And a unanimous vote here today, bipartisan, 9 Republicans and 8 Democrats all on board with those conclusions.
That's right. And, you know, I think about the debate before the war. And, of course, the break with our allies, with the French, with the Germans, the Russians and the Chinese as well, the decision by the American administration to go to war, the notion that since Saddam represented a gathering threat, that no time could be lost, not only even a few months that would have been necessary perhaps to bring our allies on board, and the fact that in the time since, the isolation of the United States in Iraq has become an extremely undermining factor in the conduct of the war itself.
But in fairness, and, Mark Danner, we weren't the only ones who thought there were weapons of mass destruction there. Almost the whole world seemed to.
Well, that's a very good point, and I think we should confront that. It is true that the French, the Germans, the Russians, and others believed there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. They did not, however, think that they constituted a threat demanding immediate war. Their view was that the inspectors in Iraq could deal with this and could investigate what exactly was going on. And of course, it turns out that they were, without a doubt, correct.
Anybody could deal with this. It turns out it wasn't there. Mark Danner, Please stand by. We have to take a short break. We're talking about the Senate report on pre-Iraq war intelligence. You can join the conversation tonight. Is it fair to blame the war on the CIA's bad intelligence? Should we be looking at how that bad intelligence was promoted and used? We're at 1-800-423-8255. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the Senate report today on pre-Iraq war intelligence, what it says, what it doesn't say, and the politics behind the inquiry. I'm joined tonight from Berkeley, California, by New Yorker writer Mark Danner. You can join the conversation as well. Where do you point blame for the flawed assessment of pre-war Iraq's weaponry, weapons capacity? If pre-war intelligence was so bad, what do you make of the terror warnings we're hearing now? Do you feel protected? What will it take to fix the CIA and guard against misuse of its findings in the future? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. A couple of hours ago, I spoke with Senator Evan Bayh, Democrat from Indiana. He's on the Senate Intelligence Committee. I asked him how far today's report goes in illuminating problems in the American intelligence community.
I think it explains a great deal about what happened. It says essentially that there was a strong pre-existing belief that Iraq possessed weapons of mass destruction, that in the post-September 11th world, there was a great deal of pressure to reach conclusions about that, even if the evidence was somewhat ambiguous, and that all doubts, all ambiguity, was resolved in favor of the pre-existing beliefs. That essentially is what happened.
How serious a failure of intelligence and the application of intelligence would you describe this as, Senator?
Well, obviously, it's a significant failure. It was one of the justifications for going to war, and I think it points out the need for better human intelligence. Frankly, Tom, there was just a lot we didn't know. It points out some slipshod work within the Central Intelligence Agency, and going forward, it points out the need for a certain level of skepticism about reaching conclusions in a world where a lot of the evidence is contradictory and doesn't lend itself to certainty.
What about the portion of the report that wasn't delivered today, that we're told won't be delivered until after the presidential elections in November, about the political purposes and pressures, but purposes to which this intelligence was put? What do you anticipate there?
Well, that, of course, is the big part of this process that is left unsaid. Today we released the evidence about why the intelligence was inaccurate. Whether the intelligence was misused, that is the second step of the process and is equally important. We need to try and make as much of that available to the American people as we can before November, because that will be useful to them in evaluating the candidates for office and determining who they want to lead the country.
Senator Bayh, what's it going to take to avoid a repeat of what happened in the CIA in the run-up to war with Iraq?
Well, it's going to take a number of things. First, more evidence, more information. Unfortunately, there's just a lot that we don't know about some dangerous places, about some organizations that are out to hurt America. We need a better way of analyzing that information, a healthier degree of skepticism about expressing certainty in a very uncertain world, and then ultimately decision makers who understand that the consequences of making decisions upon uncertain information, the consequences of that can be very serious.
Senator Bayh, finally, what would you say to American voters about how they were served in the run-up to this war by the U.S. intelligence community?
Well, regrettably, mistakes were made. But we need to understand that as a country, we need to devote more resources to collecting intelligence. We need to have better oversight, including of Congress, of the intelligence community. And we need to understand that we live in a world in which we can't be passive. We need to act. But very often, we're forced to act on less than certain information. And so we need leaders who will take their time in evaluating that information and act with care.
Senator Evan Bayh, the Democrat from Indiana, speaking with me earlier today from Washington. Mark Danner there, a fairly moderate Democratic voice from Indiana, saying we have to act with care, but it's a dangerous world. Senator Rockefeller was a bit more fiery today.
He certainly was. He actually said, "We went to war under false pretenses." That's a direct quote. You know, I have a lot of respect for Senator Bayh, but I think his Hoosier understatedness can almost mislead on what the real import of what we're looking at is. He said mistakes were made, which is the bureaucratic passive tense.
Full passive.
Mistakes weren't made. People made mistakes. And not only, I think, were there a lot of people making a lot of mistakes within the intelligence bureaucracy, but it's very clear that there was an administration set from certainly the late summer of 2002, but probably earlier than that from all our accounts, on going to war with Iraq. and that the vice president, among others, made a series of visits to the CIA to evaluate, put that in quotes, their intelligence information. We have, as you've noted, Tom, a sense in this report, in a way, of one hand clapping. Mm. It's an angry hand, and it's definitive, and it's, in the journalistic word, scathing about the intelligence community's performance. But it is one hand, because you don't have in the report, because of a decision, a political decision made by a Republican-controlled committee, an examination of how the intelligence was used. And, you know, these bureaucracies don't exist in isolation. Someone is supposed to be running them, notably the National Security Council. I mean, this is not supposed to happen. Condoleezza Rice and her staff is supposed to examine the intelligence that she gets. They're supposed to demand answers to questions about ambiguities and so on. And if you look, you don't have to look too far below the surface in these reports to find a lot of these conclusions. I'm talking about the intelligence community's original conclusions, qualified, severely qualified. And as this process went on in the months leading up to the war, you saw the qualifications one after another. The fact that the community was uncertain, that the information was unclear, the fact that stuff about nuclear weapons, for example, was very uncertain, those qualifications began to drop away, and you got this kind of gradual solidifying of information that, when it first came to the policymakers' attention, was highly qualified. And, you know, that process happened. It happened because, it seems to me, the president and his associates were determined to go to war. So the notion that this can be laid squarely at the feet of the intelligence community, and the intelligence community did not serve the president and so on, I think goes against everything that we already know, even though we don't have the second part, phase two, as Senator Roberts calls it, of the report that has been very modestly postponed until probably after the election.
In all likelihood, though, that could be explosive. Mark Danner, stand by. I want to welcome into our conversation from New York, John Fund. He's a member of the Wall Street Journal's editorial board. He writes the political diary column for the Wall Street Journal online. Good evening and welcome, John Fund.
Pleasure.
Good to have you. John, you've been, I'm sure, watching closely today and listening closely like everyone else has. Where do you come down and where the finger of blame most appropriately lies today? Is it fair to say CIA, you made a terrible mess of this and fault lies with you, or should the finger point more toward the White House and the Defense Department?
Well, first of all, I think we can safely say that George Tenet left office this week ahead of the sheriff.
Just ahead of the sheriff. He bowed out yesterday, I think, right?
Right. Secondly, I agree with Mark when he wrote in The New Yorker that the debate over Iraq has encouraged, quote, a kind of corrosive, brutal politics, unquote. And I think that the most important thing we can do for the national security of this country is to focus on solutions. Blame is certainly going to be apportioned, and certainly there's a lot of blame in this report. This report is, I think, can be analyzed in two ways. First of all, the systemic failures of the CIA. That's been across several administrations. Mr. Tenet served two administrations, one Democrat and one Republican, and the fault goes much deeper than he does. The second part is to what extent this report, which is very important, is going to be channeled into a political attack or a political, making a series of political points. And certainly the administration deserves scrutiny, and certainly the administration deserves to be held accountable. But one of the things we should avoid is, I think, reading too much into this report prematurely. The administration was cleared of applying undue pressure to alter its reports, to have the CIA alter its reports. It was also cleared of deliberately lying to the American people.
You're saying in this report today, though there's a minority view on that.
Of course there is, but we're discussing the bipartisan consensus report, which everyone agrees on. If we want to discuss minority views, we can go and do that. But we're here to discuss the bipartisan unanimous report, and those are the conclusions of that report. I think we can also certainly talk about how we can repair our human intelligence networks, which have obviously completely failed in Iraq, and we can also talk about how we don't make these mistakes again. We can also talk about how in the world the groupthink that pervaded the CIA and the administration pervaded not only our intelligence services, but those of the French and the British that reached similar conclusions, and convinced Senator Rockefeller that the who was the Democratic minority leader of the Intelligence Committee, convinced him to say in 2002, quote, there is unmistakable evidence that Saddam Hussein is working aggressively to develop nuclear weapons. Everyone believed this intelligence. The groupthink and the delusion went much further than just a few people or even one administration.
I guess that's why it's so important to dive in here and begin to pick this thing apart, because otherwise it's just endlessly circular. Mark Danner.
That's why I think we have to avoid at all costs first jumping on this as a partisan political issue, and that's one of the reasons why the timing on this is very important. I think we have to work very deliberately, you know, excuse no one, but let's not drag this immediately into partisan politics, because this is much more serious than that.
And yet, that may at some level be too simple, but Mark Danner, let me put it to you. Dan Bartlett, the White House Communications Director, said today on CEN, he said, much along the lines of John Fund, he said, now it's important that we stop pointing fingers and we get to the bottom of the fact to make sure we don't do this again. Is that the right focus now in your mind, Mark Danner?
Well, I think both Mr. Bartlett and John Fund sound very responsible, and I think they're probably very sincere. The fact is, though, that that position is itself inherently political. It's saying, at a time when the election is 4 months away, when national security is widely agreed to be the critical issue leading up to the election, and the president's performance as wartime leader, or war president, as he calls it, is the major issue in the campaign, at a time when the United States is bogged down, or at least that would be my verb, in a war in Iraq, we are supposed to take a report that is scathing about the reasons the United States went to war, that absolutely undermines what were the original justification of that war, and that at the very least says that the intelligence community under this administration, and I agree with John Fund under previous administrations as well, but under this administration performed abysmally in the most important national security function it has, which is to examine threats to the country. We're supposed to take all those things, put them in a box, consider them carefully, and not let them become involved in politics. And I would submit to you that that is completely impossible, that that won't happen. It is an inherently political question, and frankly, it should be a political question. I mean, you have now the families of nearly 1,000 people who have lost young Americans to this war. And the reasons for the war, even as its end is receding, we don't know when it will end, the reasons for its beginning are becoming more and more obscure every day. Why did it happen? So the questions raised in this report and the subsequent report that will take up the use of intelligence by policymakers are not only absolutely essential to talking about the national security of the country at a time when it's involved in a war on terror, but they're essential in talking about how the country is being led, and they are rightly political issues. And though it will be the stance of a lot of people that, goodness, this shouldn't be involved in politics, and that was supposedly the underlying reason for dividing this up, that, you know, first we have to look at the intelligence community, next we have to look at the policymakers. In fact, the reasons for doing that were also political reasons, because we don't want to have a verdict on the policymakers' use of intelligence coming out before the war.
Mark Danner and John Fund, if you'll stand by for a moment, we've got a lot of callers who want to speak to these very issues, and I want to begin to invite them in. Mitch is calling from Boston. Hi, Mitch. You're on the air.
Hello. It's an interesting show. I think there's an elephant in the room that is being missed by everyone, with all due respect.
Name it, Mitch.
Well, namely the CIA. I mean, when you use very soft language like failure of intelligence and a belief that there are weapons of mass destruction, it overlooks the fact that the CIA indeed is a rogue organization.
Rogue or rogue. In this case, inept?
No, rogue. I think it's much more devious. I think it's a deeply corrupt organization. And to say that it's a failure of intelligence lets the organization off the hook. I mean, it's like saying, well, you know, they thought that their weapons. I think this is much more calculating. I mean, if you look at the history of the CIA as an organization, it's human rights abuses. It's deception. It's lying.
So are you suggesting the in the pocket of a pro-war crowd argument or something different here?
I'm suggesting that the CIA knows what it's doing and that it's not this incompetent, misguided body. I think
so don't just look at
nice,
it.
too soft on the CIA. I mean,
let's not just call it bumbling, you say. Mitch, thanks for your call. I want to invite into our conversation Ray McGovern. He joins us from Arlington, Virginia. He served as a CIA analyst for 27 years. He's co-founder of Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity, an organization that monitors the use of intelligence. Good evening and welcome, Ray McGovern.
Hi, Tom. Glad to be with you.
Good to have you, Ray. You just heard our caller describe the CIA as a corrupt rogue organization that knows what it's doing. Is that the organization you were part of, Ray McGovern? What do you think is going on here?
Well, let me put a completely different gloss on this. The way I view today is simply that Karl Rove and the political advisors of the president have really succeeded once again in setting the terms of reference for the discussion.
How so?
Well, there's been a debacle in Iraq. Mistakes were made, or as Mark more properly said, somebody made mistakes. Now, who is that? Well, it can't be the president. We have to find somebody, so let's blame it on bad intelligence. Now, surely there was bad intelligence, specifically on weapons of mass destruction, but I would urge all of you to think back and to realize that weapons of mass destruction had nothing to do with the decision to make war on Iraq.
Well, it was certainly the central rationale for the war that was presented to the public.
Well, let me do a little time. When you're an analyst, you do a little chronology. The decision for war was made at the very latest in the spring, probably the early spring of 2002. There was no intelligence estimate. George Tenet was afraid to order one. Why? Because he might come up with the wrong, in quotes, conclusions, unpalatable to the White House. That estimate was not written until it dawned on the White House that they had to get the Congress to go along with this. Now, why the Congress? Well, our forefathers were smart enough to realize that they would vest exclusive power to wage war in the Congress, and so the Congress had to pronounce itself. And it was then and only then that George Tenet was asked to do an estimate, not by the administration, but by the Congress. They wanted to know what intelligence felt about all this. And so Tenet asked the White House. The White House said, yeah, I guess you have to do an estimate. But remember what Vice President Cheney said just a week ago on August 26th, namely that Saddam Hussein is reconstituting his nuclear weapons development program, and make sure that that estimate comes out that same way.
But, Ray, the report today says that the analysts at the CIA were not put under undue pressure by anybody.
Yeah, well, now, if you believe that, I have a bridge up in Brooklyn that I can sell you.
Excuse me.
As you know, as has already been mentioned, both Tenet and the ombudsman, whom I know quite well and worked beside for several years, and Dick Kerr, the previous deputy director of Central Intelligence, all talked about extreme pressure. The ombudsman said that in my 32 years of work in the Central Intelligence Agency, never have I seen the like of the pressure that was put on these folks. Now, they clearly had to come up with the right answer, and Tenet, to his discredit, ensured that that happened. Now, when you have the conclusion before the analysis and the evidence doesn't support the conclusion, you're going to, by definition, have shoddy analysis.
Ray McGovern, stand by. We're going to have to come back and hear from John Fund on that and Mark Danner and our callers. We're taking a short break. We're talking tonight about the Senate report on pre-Iraq war intelligence, what it says, what it doesn't say. You can join the conversation. Where do you point blame for the flawed assessment of pre-war Iraq? And does today's report make a difference in the way you see the race for the White House? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the Senate report on pre-Iraq war intelligence, what it says, what it doesn't say. You can join our conversation tonight. Is it fair to blame the war on the CIA's bad intelligence? And if you knew then what we know now about pre-war intelligence, would you have sent American troops to war? Was it worth it? Was it worth it anyway? We're at 1-800-423-8255. We're joined tonight by The New Yorker's Mark Danner, by The Wall Street Journal's John Fund, by Ray McGovern, a 27-year CIA analyst, and right now from Washington by Bill Schneider, senior political analyst for CNN. Good evening and welcome, Bill.
Thank you.
Bill, how do you assess the likely political fallout of this latest boom of the drum on what was wrong before the war?
Well, of course, the report doesn't directly assess the White House role in this, but it does make one conclusion that I think will cause the White House to breathe a sigh of relief. They said, quote, the committee did not find any evidence that administration officials attempted to coerce, influence, or pressure analysts to change their judgments related to Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
That's important because, you know, there's indications there, in fact, evidence that Vice President Cheney visited the CIA. A lot of people wonder, what was he doing there? Was he trying to elbow officials? They do not find any evidence that the administration, the White House, tried to influence the conclusions of the analysts.
But Bill, I have to ask you just on that point, because our guest, Ray McGovern, of many years at the CIA, was saying just before the break, before you came on, that if you believe that, he's got a bridge to sell you in the Brooklyn.
All I'm telling you is that's what the committee, which investigated, found it. I did not do my own independent investigation.
Fair enough.
Maybe she did. The other point, though, administration critics will say, look, what did the report find? It found that the evidence gathered by the intelligence community was mischaracterized, it was overstated, it was not backed up by the facts. It said the intelligence community fell victim to groupthink in assessing Iraq's weapons of mass destruction. So it's very easy to make the argument that the administration chose to go to war in Iraq based on bad evidence, evidence that the committee said was bad evidence.
So you think not its fault, and that's the way it will play out politically?
How will it play out? I'm not sure anybody's going to change his or her mind based on the findings of this committee. The committee will eventually, after the election, this was a deal made between Republicans and Democrats, after the election, they'll release a report assessing the administration's use of this evidence.
Mm-hmm.
But it's pretty clear that they had bad evidence, and they went to war based on what the committee calls bad evidence, even if they themselves didn't pressure the CIA to produce the bad evidence.
So you're reading this today, as I hear you, Bill Schneider, as a net plus for the Bush campaign.
Yes, I think so, because of that assessment, or at least the Bush campaign escaped any more serious damage because the committee could have found that Cheney tried to influence them, or that the White House tried to influence the intelligence community. There's no evidence of that. President Bush, interestingly today, changed his line a little bit about the war. You know, initially he said, we know Saddam Hussein has weapons of mass destruction. Then later he said, we know Saddam Hussein had weapons programmed
mm-hmm.
to produce weapons.
Related activities. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Today he talked about Saddam Hussein had the intention of building weapons of mass destruction. So you can see a steady ratcheting down of the allegations. But the president continues to maintain he was a bad guy. The world is, and the United States, is better off and safer without him. That, I must say, remains to be seen. If there's another terrorist attack, which Tom Ridge said we can expect mm-hmm. as an attempt to disrupt the election, then it's fair to raise the question, is the United States and the world really safer because of the Iraq war? That question is bound to come up.
But as for today, maybe the Bush reelection campaign a little better off in the light of this report. Bill Schneider, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Bill Schneider, senior political analyst at CNN. John Fund, a couple of bullets have come your way in the last few minutes here. Ray McGovern says that if you believe that there wasn't pressure put on CIA analysts, he's got a bridge to sell you somewhere between Manhattan and Brooklyn. What do you say?
Well, Mark Danner put it best. There are two kinds of pressure. Pressure to change your conclusions and pressure to get more information. And Mr. Danner indicated that the evidence is more likely to say that the pressure was to get more. Let's remember something. This is not done in a vacuum. Saddam Hussein, after the Gulf War, admitted he had weapons of mass destruction. He issued a partial inventory. We found he had been hiding some, and we made a complete list. To have what happened happen, Saddam Hussein would have had to disarm unilaterally and not tell the world. And that's apparently what the preponderance of evidence shows. That is a highly unusual act, even for a psychotic dictator. Secondly, let's make it very clear that we're not going to have solutions to this problem if we have premises that are put on the table with insufficient evidence. If the premise is that the Bush administration decided to go to war in the spring of 2002, which is a year beforehand, that goes against the preponderance of evidence this committee and other people have found. No one less than John Edwards, who's the Democratic vice presidential candidate, was asked about this on MSNBC last year. And he said, I sat in meeting after meeting after meeting. We were told about the presence of weapons of mass destruction. The decision was made much later. And he said, did I get misled? No, I didn't get misled. And he says that the decision was made much later, and that's when 75 senators, including Senators Rockefeller, who was convinced there were nuclear weapons programs, and including Senator Edwards and including Senator Kerry, all voted for the war. This is a systemic failure.
But that's talking about Congress's decision.
Not just of the intelligence community, not just of the administration, but also of Congress, including the people on the Intelligence Committee who had access to all of the information that the president saw.
May well have been a different timetable for the White House and Congress, but I want to get our callers in again. John is calling from Warren, Rhode Island. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
I was one of the people that in 1995, when he had a son-in-law's murdered and they escaped and gave some information.
Saddam Hussein's son-in-law, yes.
Yeah, son-in-laws. I came to the conclusion I can never trust this guy. He had to go. So I didn't really need all this, the CIA reports and all that kind of stuff. I already was predisposed to making this decision.
So it was all worth it, the money, the lives, the works.
Well, as when 9/11 happened, the two reasons why I wanted it was not so much I didn't never believe that Saddam Hussein was going to attack us, but I did believe proliferation was happening. Breakup of the Soviet Union was happening.
A lot of people believed it. So how do you see it today, John?
So my question is, all the critics are saying that, you know, we should have never gone to war, and I never heard their conclusion. Are they saying that we should have taken off sanctions and let them go? Are they saying that we should have brought, you know, the inspections were all dependent on us bringing over 130,000 troops over there just to get the inspections? Are they saying they wanted all our...
Well, there were inspections before that full load came over.
Excuse me?
There were inspections before that full crew came over.
No, there wasn't.
Well, sure there were, for many years.
41 didn't happen, and he didn't agree to that.
I mean, we had a lot of inspections, but anyway, your point being...
The point is that basically what I'm hearing, words that are missing from all the critics is basically if there's no weapons of mass destruction, we should let Saddam Hussein go. Is that what the conclusion is?
And that just doesn't sit right with you. Let us pick it up. Mark Danner, what do you say?
Well, I'm not sure who says that. I know a lot of people who opposed going to the war in the spring of 2003. I know very few. In fact, I can think of none who thought they should or the U.S. should, quote, let Saddam Hussein go. I mean, at that time, there were inspectors, several hundred within the country. They were investigating all the sites that, among others, the United States intelligence community informed the United Nations where weapons of mass destruction might be found. Saddam had been and was, since the early 90s, contained. There was a regime of flights over the country, and any sites that he didn't let inspectors visit could have been bombed if that was necessary. His army, which had been nearly a million strong, was down to several hundred thousand. He didn't threaten any of his neighbors. Few of them, and none of the major ones, supported a war to unseat him. He was indeed contained, and containment was working. And I certainly didn't support letting him go, whatever that might mean. Many have pointed out that the Clinton administration itself, President Clinton signed in 1998, the law that changed administration policy, the policy of the United States, to back regime change. Mm-hmm. And some have drawn the conclusion that this meant that the Bush administration policy and the Clinton policy were the same. They weren't. Clinton supported regime change, but not through going to war directly with Saddam Hussein. He did by keeping the sanctions on, by keeping pressure on the regime, by a variety of means, by supporting the opposition outside the country. You know, so the notion that the alternative, goodness, something had to be done in 2003 about Saddam Hussein, and that was either go to war with him and occupy Iraq, as we did, or let him go. I think that choice is completely misstated.
False
that isn't,
choice, but
that
Mark,
isn't what we
but
completely.
We kind of hear in John comments and from President Bush mm-hmm. when he asks, is the world not better off without Saddam Hussein in power? As if to say, whatever the intelligence was, aren't we better off?
Well, I think you're asking a number of questions there, really. I mean, what do we mean, is the world better off? Is the United States better off? I would argue that it isn't. 1,000 Americans are dead. We have a war that is continuing. Americans are dying every day on the ground. Al-Qaeda has now obtained another front, similar to Afghanistan in the late 80s, for which to recruit radicals to its cause. It's a continuing bleeding war that the United States doesn't know how to end. Now, are the Iraqis better off? Well, I suppose a lot of people would say, yes, absolutely. Saddam is gone. But a significant number, and I've spent time in Iraq and reported from there, would say no. They'd say that, you know, somewhere between 10,000 and 20,000 Iraqis have died in this war. There's a situation that's terribly unstable. You can't go out on the streets in Baghdad or Samarra or Fallujah. Fallujah is now in the hands of Islamist radicals. U.S. forces can't even enter the city.
So you can argue both ways here.
Well, you know, you can make an argument. You know, there are a lot of Iraqis who don't think the country's better off. I mean, I don't think it's a majority, but there are significant numbers of Iraqis who believe that things have deteriorated terribly. You know, if you weren't involved in politics before under Saddam.
And you weren't in a mass grave.
And weren't in a mass grave, exactly. I mean, you could go out on the street. You were safe. You did not, you know, I'm talking about what Iraqis tell me. So the assumption that, well, gosh, you know, everything is better now that Saddam is gone. I mean, American foreign policy makes decisions based on what makes the country more secure. And I think it's a very considerable argument now, a debate that one could have on whether the country is more secure now than it was in March 2003.
That country being
when
the USA. I need to turn
when it launched a war that it didn't need to fight at that time,
yeah.
You know, and that is what the French and the Germans and the Russians believe. They didn't think Saddam was wonderful. They just thought that, you know, this is not a gathering.
Not the time. I need to turn to Ray McGovern here. Ray, our time is growing short. There's a lot of talk today about reform of the CIA. You're defending the agency at a number of levels, but at the same time, we've got problems here. What kind of reform do you think the agency needs?
Well, I'm not defending the agency in the slightest. They were guilty of the worst possible analytic sin, which is to cook the intelligence to the recipe of high policy.
Okay.
The agency has been corrupted. It started, the institutional corruption started under Bill Casey. People who have bubbled up to the top are folks that are more concerned about their advancement and keeping a place at the president's table than at telling the truth. And so a whole-scale cleaning, a whole-scale house cleaning is going to be necessary to make that agency what it used to be.
What would it take to make that happen?
Well, you'd need a change in leadership at the top of our government, and you need a strong person in as the director of Central Intelligence who knows something about management and who doesn't need the job and will quit if the president or anyone else asks him to do something that his integrity would not allow.
John Fund, we just got a minute left. What do you say? What do you say? A wholesale house cleaning at the CIA, even from your perspective, is that in order?
Even though this is political, I think that it's going to impede the search for solutions by making this something about removing George Bush, which is what Mr. McGovern said. Let me put two things very quickly on the table. Mm. There were 17 UN resolutions that Saddam Hussein ignored. There was some cost to having somebody stay in power who was simply going to thumb his nose in the international community and make a mockery of the United Nations, which is an institution that should work. Secondly, the Oil for Food program, we now know, had completely been evaded by Saddam. He had more than enough money to create weapons of mass destruction if he chose to, and he had bribed the French and the Russians and many other people who opposed the war, and perhaps for one of those reasons, that they were financially compromised.
We've got half a minute, and these we know, but is it time to upend the CIA? Is it time to clean the CIA house?
Of course. I have some sympathy for the late Daniel Patrick Moynihan, who thought that we should get rid of the CIA and start all over. So that's not the issue. The question is, how are we best going to have the search for solutions? And pointing towards the election in November is a very easy, feel-good way of doing it. But I think that in this current partisan atmosphere, that's not the first place to go. That should be the second or third question.
And yet we know it's going to happen. John Fund, thank you so much for joining us tonight. Great to have you. John Fund on the Wall Street Journal's editorial board, and Ray McGovern in Arlington, Virginia, CIA analyst for 27 years, co-founder of Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. Thank you for being with us.
You're welcome.
Mark Danner in Berkeley, California, staff writer for The New Yorker. Thanks so much for coming along tonight, Mark.
Thank you, Tom.
Great to have you. Listeners, you can continue this conversation online at onpointradio.org. Click on forums. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.